I believe that they think that I must be a good foundation layer in here, because that's what I'm doing again today, okay? So we laid the foundation for marriage and what marriage is and God's idea about marriage the last time I was here, and now I'm going to lay part one of the dynamics of conflict, okay? So that's where we're at. I want to start by telling you a story. Now, this is the story as given from the perspective of a 13-year-old. You might say, wow, this is going to sound kind of personal. That's because it's true. I was the 13-year-old, okay? But I want you to understand this, because the church I grew up in, I love my church dearly. I love that church, that area dearly. I still am a huge supporter of our pastor that is at that church. But that church, at the time when I was growing up as a kid, it seemed like every 5 years, a major conflict would break out inside of the church. And it would turn into this big, huge, ugly thing. Now, I'm going to change some of the scenario and some of the situations so that I'm not just telling you straight-up stories, but here's what it is. I want you to hear this, because this is a baseline for what it seems like a lot of times conflicts come from and how they play out in churches. All right, so here we go. The church has just hired a new pastor. He's been there for about 2 years. He's the lead pastor, okay? There are two assistant pastors that have stayed on staff as pastors after the new guy came. So they were assistant pastors before. The church decided to hire a new lead pastor. He came in. Technically, in that situation, in most church situations, they would give him the opportunity to choose whether to keep these two guys or not. And he chose to keep both of these men on staff. So the church is now having a business meeting to discuss some improvements that need to happen within that building, all right? There's just some wear and tear things, some things that need to be taken care of inside of that building. And so the suggestion has now just been made by the head of the deacon board that they would take down the striped wallpaper that has been on the back wall of the platform. Okay, it was beautiful, by the way. It was brown and olive green, okay? Like, I mean, it was like something straight out of the 80s, all right? And not everything out of the 80s is bad, right? Like me. Okay, so anyways, there's that, all right. So that's what the suggestion has been. And suddenly, chaos breaks out. I mean, I'm talking about literal shouting. Before long, it's evident there's two different teams here. There's one, Team A. Team A is the team that's with the lead pastor and with assistant pastor A, okay? And they are team no more wallpaper, okay? That's them, okay? And then there's Team B, who is with assistant pastor B, all right? So here's the stuff that started rattling around. Since you all want to change our church and you've been implementing changes since the day the new pastor came here, why don't you just go down the road and start your own church and you can pick out your own decorations? To which someone else yells out, yeah, I bet you don't even like our brown carpet, right? Okay, all right, so like, it's getting heated, all right. Team A replies, we're sorry if you're so in love with the wallpaper, we can just leave the wallpaper there, we care more about the unity of our church. Then Team B, also, assistant pastor A one time allowed 3 minutes of the halftime show to come on one of the TVs during the youth group Super Bowl party 6 years ago, so clearly he has no morals. Yeah, you know where that's going, right? Team A, folks, why are we fighting about these things? We should be talking about them. Then somebody randomly, I'm not even sure what team they were on, just yells out, Calvinist! Okay. And then the fight goes on for the next hour, and no one can reach a peaceful agreement. The auditorium empties and people walk out to the parking lot glaring at all the people on the other side of the arguments. And then the phones start working. Which team are you on? Which team are you on? Meanwhile, the teens and the children of the church spend the next several months wondering why their friendships with their other teens have been ruined. Why are the parents acting like children? Where is the attitude that says that we should be committed to glorify God at all costs, that they were taught as children within that church? Where is that now? Right? How many of you think that fight was actually about the wallpaper? Did it have anything to do with the wallpaper or the carpet? They're both hideous, but did it have anything to do with that? No. What did it have to do with? It had to do with a whole bunch of built-up worship of self inside of themselves that wasn't dealt with. And as a result of it, it just poured out in disgusting ways. And once one person got going, the next person got going, and then pretty soon it turns that way. Now, that is one illustration. How many more illustrations like that could we come up with together today? How many families could we talk about where that's the case? How many families could you talk about where there's siblings who haven't talked to each other in years because some little tiny conflict resulted in the revelation of both of their hearts and it was ugly in what was revealed, okay? We're going to talk about the dynamics of conflict. So let's talk about this. What is the cause of all conflicts? Now, I told you this is foundational. These are probably truths you've seen before. This is probably scripture passages you've seen before, but hopefully these will be helpful for us because in the process of helping people with reconciliation, you have to get to the place of where you discover where did the conflict come from? Where was the start of it? James chapter 4 tells us that your pleasures are the source of your conflicts. I'm going to read you lots of scripture today, okay? Are you guys okay with reading lots of scripture at a biblical counseling conference? Okay, all right. Here we go. James 4, 1 through 12. What is the source of quarrels and conflicts among you? Is not the source of your pleasures that wage war in your members? You lust and do not have, so you commit murder. You are envious and cannot obtain, so you fight and quarrel. You do not have because you do not ask. You ask and do not receive because you ask with wrong motives so that you may spend it on your pleasures. You adulteresses, do you not know that friendship with the world is hostility toward God? Therefore, whoever wishes to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. Or do you think that the scripture speaks to no purpose? He jealously desires the spirit which has made to dwell in us, but he gives a greater grace. Therefore, it says, God is opposed to the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Submit, therefore, to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. Be miserable, and mourn, and weep, and let your laughter be turned into mourning, and your joy to gloom. Humble yourself in the presence of the Lord, and he will exalt you. Do not speak against one another, brethren. He who speaks against a brother or judges his brother speaks against the law and judges the law. But if you judge the law, you are not a doer of the law, but a judge of it. There is only one lawgiver and judge, the one who is able to save and to destroy. But who are you to judge your neighbor? Now, let's just quickly walk through this and see some of the truths that we can learn about conflict from this passage of Scripture. First of all, our pleasures quickly become our idols. Our pleasures quickly become our idols. You know how easy it is to let something that is a good thing suddenly take over the worship center of your heart? Okay, I'm going to share with you a passion and a love I have is the Chicago Cubs. All right, so anyways, all right. Our pleasures can quickly become our idols, right? All of a sudden, you start to put too much time into it, right? So as a Cubs fan, you might know this, but as a Cubs fan, they more recently than the Cardinals or White Sox have won a World Series, okay? So like you might not have known that, but they have, okay? And so the reality is during that stretch and during that time, it was real easy for someone like me who grew up near Chicago, loving the Chicago Cubs, to spend all my attention and all my affection on the Chicago Cubs. In fact, on November 1st, was a Wednesday night, November 1st of 2016. That's the day that the Cubs won the World Series. Technically, they won on November 2nd because it was after AM, but that's okay. On that night, there was youth group. You know what was my struggle with my idol at that point in time when youth group started? Was the fact that the Cubs game was going to start as youth group was going, right? Like, I was kind of in two places at once there, okay? All right, so now listen, it's easy for the things that you have pleasure in to become your idol. So let's talk about the progression of an idol. Now, this is from Ken Sandy's book, The Peacemaker, but here's how it goes. First of all, I desire something. I desire it. I want what I want, okay? That's it. I want it. I have decided that's what I want. So then what happens? I demand it. I demand it. Give me it. He said it this way. When we see something as being essential to our fulfillment and well-being, it moves from being a desire to a demand. I wish I could have this evolves into, I must have this. Okay? Use the Cubs as an example. I wish I could have 3 hours of no interruptions to watch the Chicago Cubs game. Okay? It moves into, kids go to bed, dad's about to watch the Chicago Cubs game. Do you understand? Okay, I start to demand it. Okay, next. This is where trouble sets in.